round. Tonight's kick the town. Right the sack outside the game. And you know what I'm talking about. Just let me know if you wanna go to that whole mile on the range. They got a lot of nice girls.
Hey everybody, welcome to Drive Through HR. Brian, William, and Nisha coming to you every day talking about HR with the people that are getting it done out there. So let's jump right into it because we got a lot to talk about. Friend of the show, social friend and a friend, Kevin Grossman. Welcome back to Drive Through HR.
Thank you, Brian and William and Nisha. Thank you very much for having me on.
Well, my friend, it's good to hear your voice, and if we'll, you know, let's kick it off, and if you would introduce yourself to our listeners, and then let's get right into kind of what's top of mind with you.
Sure, sure. So for those listening at home, Kevin W. Grossman, because as we know, middle initials count. And I've been in the HR recruiting space for over 14 years, almost 14 years now, primarily on the vendor tech side, but do lots of, I always like to joke and say that I played HR and recruiting on TV and love what the practitioners do in the space and like working as closely with them as I can. So now, right now, currently I'm with PeopleFluent as the director of content development, like a communications conduit of telling a much better story from a corporate perspective. And I'm also a co-founder of the weekly chat, T-Chat, which you guys know quite well as well. And we talk about lots of world of work topics every week, plus our own little weekly internet radio show that we do and the Twitter chat. And that's partly the way I roll, gentlemen.
Nice, nice. Now, Kevin, normally we'd start off with the what's top of mind for you, and we will definitely get into that. But you're in Boston today, so
yeah.
Tell us a little bit about that.
So it's interesting because and before I even came here, I was in Vegas at the Sherm Talent Management Conference, which I want to touch on too because I thought it was a really well done show this year, as it usually is with content and speakers and such. But so I hear the news of what happened at the marathon, on Monday when I was at the show, and like, wow, and I knew I was going to be coming here on late Wednesday night to come to our corporate headquarters and welcome. And so, you know, my day yesterday was fairly uneventful, and, you know, things were transpiring locally with them trying to find the suspects. Finally, they identified them. And then early this morning, I came back from an early morning workout, and there was an email from our HR VP, Steven is his name, and a fine gentleman, and he is sending a worldwide company email saying, you know, please do not come to the Waltham office today. It's going to be shut down. In fact, most of the areas around Watertown, which is where a lot of the activity has been, the police activity, is being locked down, and they're going through homes and trying to find the second suspect who's still at large. And Waltham's pretty close. It's only like, I think, 3 miles away from Watertown. So I'm holed up here in the hotel. But I feel for... I mean, it feels like the greater community, just because of the horrible incidents that have occurred and the deaths and the victims and the families. But I think that what's even happened more, one thing that I was getting my head around today is just this economic disruption that's occurred today. And when these things happen and the whole city basically shutting down, so all mass transportation and taxis and not every single business, but a lot of them. And then, you know, families being removed from their homes so they could be, the homes could be searched, and just the stopping of the world of work and what, you know, and something that we're still trying to kind of heal and get better in. And that to me is part of the story, not to discount any of the sad tragedy, but just this economic disruption, I think is quite relevant as well. And so anyway, I think, and I imagine all the other HR folks out there, right, and directors that have had to contact their businesses and say, you don't come to work today, stay home and stay safe. And, you know, I love what we do in this space and how we're so connected with the people that work for us and with us. But that's top of mind for me. So
yeah,
it's pretty light subject, right?
No, yeah, true. Thanks. Thanks for being a nice and uplifting Friday guest there. I almost slipped my wrist now. The thing is, though, there is, we've got West, which is West, Texas, you know, the fertilizer plant that blew up. We've got the Oklahoma City anniversary that's in the back of our minds. And then everything that's going on in Boston in the week. And, you know, as HR pros, we're actually – what do we do to prepare for emergencies? How do we kind of get ourselves ready to deal with tornadoes and mudslides and hurricanes and anything that you can possibly throw in there? And then how do you communicate to an audience? Like what's the repetition or, you know, what's the cadence? You know, what should we disclose? What shouldn't we disclose, et cetera? So take us into just, you know, as you deconstruct those things, Kevin, how should we kind of get ourselves ready, quote unquote, ready for these types of events? And what do you think, you know, what's your beliefs on communication strategies to employees?
No, I think that's a really good question. And I'll start by answering that from more personally and at home. So for example, in my immediate community where I live, we have, it's a development of about 15 homes. We have our own homeowners association. For the longest, we've been living there now since 2006, so do the math, 7 years. I'm coming up on 7 years. And I've been involved in the association pretty active every year, not so much in the past couple, but whatever the case is, involved in the neighborhood, as many of us are, like to do and be in our communities. And we've been talking about having an emergency preparedness plan for the neighborhood since day one that we moved in, and we don't have one yet. So I guess the way to kind of answer your question is that, A, get one done, period. Don't keep talking about it. And I think this is true for a lot of things in business today and a lot of kind of grief that HR gets about not so much being a doer, but just more like we have to get a committee together, or we have to ask for funding, and we have to just get it done. Put a plan together, pull in the right resources, get the plan done. That's number one. And then two, make sure that whatever, you know, backbone that you have now with the communications technology, especially if you have dispersed teams, remote teams, if you have your own intranet, if you have a talent management suite that has a communications channel like we have a PeopleFluent or whatever the company is, if you even, for God's sake, even email, which I despise personally, but even then, to communicate this plan regularly, have reviews with the teams, department leads, divisions, depending on how big the company is. If it's small enough to just do it together in one sitting, then do it on a regular basis. But I think have a plan and remind everybody of what it is and what it means, so that when that event does happen, you can be think about it being first responders in your own organization. So whether you've been designated specifically with a role to fill or not, you have an idea of the plan and you can respond effectively when it happens. But my God, get a plan and have it done.
Do you think that we should be graded, or part of our performance review and or compensation should be a part of our readiness? Meaning, you know, we're graded based on how ready we are for emergencies, let's say. Do you think that this should be woven into our performance reviews and or compensation?
I mean, that's a big loaded question, but I would have to say yes, I think, for the most part. Now, what that looks like is going to vary across organizations and cultures and the size of company, but I do think yes, because I do think that it's like, you know, we buy insurance, most of us do, on some level, in case something happens. So whether that be property insurance, whether that be car insurance, companies have to have liability insurance of some kind. I mean, and you may never have to access and use that and call it out and ask to get a check and see if your house burns down because there's an earthquake or an explosion in West Texas. But I think you have to still have that in place, again, going back to the front. So, yes, I do think that companies, the preparedness, the readiness of dealing with anything that happens, natural disaster, war, attack, workplace violence, for example. You know, we can even touch on that, right? Because that's still something that, unfortunately, happens probably more regularly than we're even aware of. And even with overall violence levels being down, overall, when you look at research and history, but that's another story for another time. But I think just having that, so I do think so. I do think that should be part of the performance evaluation, is how ready are you for anything.
Nice. What's your take on social media as it relates to these types of communications? Meaning, do you feel like there's that we should use those mediums and or communicate to our employees and maybe even a larger external audience and use social media during times of emergencies?
Again, the short answer there is yes, but there are caveats to that because I think if you talk about the external media that we're all, you know, heavily involved with every day, so the Facebooks, the Twitters, the things that aren't locked down, that are public, that are open, which I'm a proponent of, but I think we have to be wary. So I do think there has to be individuals in the organization that do have designations of helping to not only disseminate the right information, but to vet information that's coming in, because you know that if you see, you know, we've seen this has happened many, many times before, and the media are just as guilty of it as well, where there's something that's not, there's a misinformation of some kind that gets distributed, and all of a sudden today it can spread very quickly across all sorts of channels, and that's a good thing, because that, you know, you look back at Arab Spring and lots of other global events that have occurred, and even today, of being able to distribute information quickly, but it's not, you know, the quality of that information is sometimes can be suspect. So I think that when you talk about an organization, a business, if you're using a closed network platform or a combination thereof of using external social as well as internal, you do have to have, I think, people responsible for distributing, which I think does come back to the people management people, which is HR, and then also but vetting too, just to make sure that because so much unfortunate misinformation can seep through and can cause, you know, undue panic, whatever the case is. So did I answer the question, Liam?
You bet. You know, a framework for feedback that's discussed in our space a lot is public praise, private criticism, where you kind of separate the two. How do we communicate during times of stress, during times of emergency? How do we communicate either bad news and or ambiguity? And those are different. So, like, we just don't know anything, and let me communicate that. How do we communicate that? And then on the bad news, what do you think are some models that people can use in terms of communicating bad news during times of an emergency?
Well, I think, again, you take – the organizations themselves, particularly private industry, but I would even argue government entities, public sector. I mean, we have a different responsibility. Maybe it's to our employees first and foremost, and that includes anybody associated with the organization. So that includes temporary staff, that includes contingent contract workers, that includes the vendors that somehow work with us, not just the full-time folks themselves. We are responsible to them first, but I also think that I'm a big fan of transparency, but not just to, like, yeah, you know, dump your your purse out in front of me. And no offense, ladies, or your man purse for me, like that's what I call mine, my big old bag. You don't dump it out in front of everybody without first thinking about what is it that I need to share now? What do I know? And if it's something that's on a global scale, or meaning global from an enterprise perspective, then you make sure you're sharing the most relevant information. And I recommend doing that, but not everything if you don't know everything. And be careful with them. And if it has to be ambiguous, then be clear about that. We don't know everything. This is what we know now. So this is what I'm sharing with you. And when we know information, we'll let you know. And I think that's key. And because not everything has to be shared, particularly in the inner workings of the business. And if it relates to individuals, whether it's performance related, whatever the case is, then that in and of itself should be dealt with very much more individually, and only if something's truly relevant to the global population does it need to be revealed. So anyway, that's my thought on that.
Nice. Hey, Kevin, let's do a quick reset. Everybody
sure.
Listening to Drive Through HR, we're on with Kevin Grossman. So, you know, we just kind of to stay with the stream of thought you were just on, where are organizations getting transparency wrong? I mean, just like missing the runway, completely off, you know, wheels off the tracks.
I think one of the things, and this is funny because I've just been talking about this internally with my new colleagues, but and even with practitioners that I talk with this week at the Sherm Talent Management and just other recent folks, I think we're getting it wrong when we think of social collaboration in the sense of the external open networks. So because what happens is, you know, companies are still really, even though there's adoption is growing and, you know, we can go to Pew and other places to see those numbers about social, everything social, we get it wrong because those open networks, we can't, you know, we don't own and we don't want to own those. There's a place for those, even for the employees in an organization as well as leadership can be used in a positive way, and marketing uses them in a way, and recruiting does. But we mistake that for what truly can be collaboration on a global scale, if not even just a local scale, when you have individuals that are working over here at home and those in the main office and those that are traveling a lot and those that are in Canada office or in South America. They're equating this whole social thing with, you know, people doing stupid stuff and saying stupid stuff and, you know, and like, you know, saying that Rush doesn't have a great song and what else? I was wanting you guys to laugh on that. Come on. The laughter.
I was on mute. Sorry about
okay,
that.
Thank you. All right, just as long as I got your attention. All right. So, but I think that's for, so, Brian. So simply, where I was going is that I think they get it wrong because they equate this open, scary social world that we're now really in with how truly you can collaborate across different kinds of networks, whether they be private. With individuals. I mean, even, you know, the old-fashioned email and different ways of just, you know, picking up the phone and calling, this that's where they get social wrong. So does that make sense, equating the...
Totally does. Let me ask you, as we're talking about social, I want to ask you a content question. You've been producing and been a part of producing a lot of content over the last 15 years for the Internet. And the question has two parts, and one is where you created something, a visual, a narrative, a story, a blog post, whatever, and you really thought that people would kind of take hold, share it, comment, it would create controversy. Like you just knew that when you put it out in front of people, that people would really get interested in it, and it didn't. And the opposite of that, the second part of that is, where did you think that you, when you created something, that it was kind of benign and 100 people commented on it or et cetera? So it's the unhidden gems of content where you think you're going to pull a lever and you don't, and the opposite of that, where you think something's going to be really fairly kind of no one's going to ever notice and all of a sudden the world pays attention.
You know, that's an interesting question because I think the way – that I've discovered the differences of those, and I think where how my voice has grown, at least from a personal writing perspective, whether that be my business blog, quote unquote, or my personal blog, or even the first book that I just had out. I think my voice of being personable and accessible, regardless of what I'm talking about, and making it, I think, trying to relate it more with me to you, as if we were sitting down at a table having coffee or a beer or whatever beverage of choice. That's what I found over time that people dig more. For me, I didn't find that at first. So I'm not quite answering your question directly, but I think the point is that when I thought I had something that was, you know, knocked down, semi-journalistic, cool stuff that was much more buttoned up, that I thought this is really going to resonate, and it didn't. And what I found that what resonates more, and I think this is true of both of your styles, I know especially you, William, I think what resonates more is when they feel like they're sitting down with us. That, to me, is what I've learned that works better.
Do you think social media is making us more or less homogenous? Meaning, is it harder to be different now than it was prior to social media?
You mean from a personal brand perspective? Is that what you're talking about?
I don't really separate corporate from personal, but
yes. Neither do I. Sure, but right. But as an individual, you mean? I think that I think what
let me give you a couple. For instance. And I'll use myself as a great example of this. Like the other night I went on to Facebook, and I liked a bunch of, you know, tattoo artists and a bunch of bars and motorcycles that I like. And all this, you know, X-rated, quote-unquote, content, you know, a bunch of adult models and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Because I like a lot of those types of, let's just call it, adult content-oriented things. But, you know, I thought to myself, you know what, somebody might see that in their stream and say, you know what, I don't want to be around this guy because he likes, you know, tattoo, you know, women or suicide girls or any of that type of stuff. So, like, in the back of my mind, I thought, you know what, maybe it's harder now to be different prior or after social media, because before that, no one would have ever known, quote, known, and thus no one would have any judgment. So I guess the social media, this transparency that we live in, does it make us more or less apt to be different or hide those differences?
You know, I think it depends on how comfortable you are. I mean, to use the cliche, in your own skin, right? I mean, for those that are socially gregarious, for those that are, that have pushed the, that have, you know, made a way for themselves over time and professionally as well as personally, and that are comfortable with presenting themselves in that light, but there's still a likability factor. And I think that's one of the big differences that I've noticed, is that I think it does work if you're likable. Now, I know there's going to be people out there that would argue, you know, everybody likes a villain, everybody, you know, there's the whole idea of having a nemesis or an archenemy, and whatever the case is, and that, you know, some people like the bad boy or bad girl, but I don't think so. I think when my circles and all of us in the space that we've been in, from a people management perspective, when you link it back to HR and what we do, if you are a likable and fairly stable, emotionally intelligent person, we're more acceptable of that, and I can turn that off, right? It's like TV or radio or anything. I don't have to. I can still like you, but I don't have to watch that or check or listen to it. So I think it's given us the choice to get to know each other better, but we can also turn it, dial it up and down. So that's my take on it.
Nice. And William, I will admit that I had, you know, some of the things that you like, your stream, you know, I tend to follow because we, you know, we do quite a bit together. And you know, it's opened up some avenues that I didn't anticipate opening up. Leather and ice cream. Who knew, right? But, so social networking and the tools, they do work. So I appreciate that.
Yeah, yeah. I do. I mean, I still think that you have to, again, it's individuals, you have to be able to, I mean, there's an impulse control issue too, right? I mean, you still have to be able to know, even if you're pushing the boundary, to know what those boundaries are, I think.
No, that's just under- you know, you're on to something. I need to give it some more thought, and thank you, Brian, for that reference as well. I think, Kevin, we've only got 5 minutes left in the show. This thing blew by, of course, as you know. We would hate it if we got off this call and didn't talk about TalentNet, the wonderful work that you are doing over at TalentNet and TeachNet. Take us into where you and Megan are taking that over the next couple months.
So, yeah, I mean, what with TeachNet, what we can continue to do is just try to, you know, tackle different topics every week that you know, anything, nothing's off limits, from recruitment to outplacement to business innovation to technology to anything. And we just try to bounce it around, sometimes relate it to events that we're going to be at, sometimes keep it, you know, more pure of content. And we're going to keep the radio show going. We're going to keep the weekly TeachNet going and try to be at more events too. So that could be at a variety of different venues, but to do more live interaction. Because I think at the end of the day, I've said this before and again, that all this stuff that we do online together just continues to fuel the FaceTime that we want to. And that's why I think it is beneficial to still get out, whether it's locally in your own networking events and you're being your company itself, participating in those events or going to conferences. I think it's important. So those, we're going to try to do more FaceTime.
Good. And also before we get on, that's fantastic. And tell us a little bit about your book. We got about 2.5 minutes left, and we definitely have to talk about that before we close this thing out.
Sure. And I'll do a quick plug for my next one. So my book now is called Tech Job Hunt Handbook. It's a career management book for, it's fine for tech professionals, but it's really for anybody. And it's all about the things that we have all learned to do over time, from leveraging our networks to positioning our personal brands to how to do an interview and just lots of fun stuff in that regard. And then there's an actual book about emerging best practice process and emerging technology for HR folks that I'm starting to work on that maybe will hopefully come out in the next year or something like that. So.
Well, cannot wait for that to happen. And last question, what was the best thing that you got out of the conference you were just at in Vegas?
So and I'm glad you asked that. So real quick, I don't know if anybody of you have seen Cy Wakeman speak before.
Yep,
she's got
Cy.
Reality-based rules, or I can't remember the name. She's got a new book coming out. But one of the things she said that was one of the most refreshing things I've ever heard is she just said, quit apologizing for being in HR, quit asking for permission to do stuff, quit asking for funding for certain initiatives that may never get funded and get the work done. You're already sitting at the table, get the work done. That's what I heard.
Nice. Well, Kevin, thank you. That is a fantastic way to leave today, the week, get you out of Boston, get things wrapped up there.
Yeah.
Fantastic.
Yep. Thank you, Bob.
So,
good time.
Well, you know what? Just for you, we're going to roll out with a special tune. And
no,
have a good week,
please.
Everybody. We're out here.